Rugby Podcast.
And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast ahead of round four in the RBS Six Nations this weekend. We're building up to Ireland against Wales in Cardiff on Friday night, and I'm delighted to be joined in studio as always by Wes Liddy, RTE Rugby Editor, and by Mike Ruddock, former Wales coach of course, and currently doing a fine job at Lansdowne in the Ulster Bank League. Mike, it's great to talk to you.
Yeah, pleased to be here. Delighted to see the game on the horizon and looking forward to it. You know, it should be a cracker.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're building up. I think, Wes, the first thing to say is, right, Friday night rugby in the Six Nations, farce. Get rid of it. What are we doing? It suits nobody. It doesn't suit the tourism industry, the hotels, the fans travelling over.
What, why are we doing it? In Cardiff, they'll all be in there all day. I mean, they'll be sinking the pints. I tell you what, it'll be some atmosphere. I don't know if they've agreed whether or not they close the roof. I wouldn't have thought they would, but it'll be some atmosphere there. And I think that's, you know, whereas if it was England, I think the English might be a little bit more intimidated because the atmosphere would be a little bit more alien, if you like. They'd be sort of slightly against them. Whereas the Irish, everyone loves the Irish. The Welsh loves the Irish. So it'd be more of a party atmosphere. So I think the Irish lads will actually enjoy the atmosphere.
You're actually in favour of Friday night Six Nations
games?
No.
I'm not in favour of it. I'm just saying that it is what it is.
Yeah. I think it'd be cracking atmosphere.
Yeah,
as well,
it'd be electric. But I think it'd be a real party atmosphere, you know it?
No, like nighttime games are brilliant generally. I just think the inconvenience for a lot of people of Friday nights,
For travelling fans especially, I suppose. Yeah. But in fairness, just when Mike was saying about it being a bit more hostile for the English, maybe it's a weird fixture with the home advantage hasn't really meant a lot in it over the years. You know, Ireland have won 5 of 8 visits to Cardiff, kind of since the stadium came about in 2000 or 2001 or whatever it was. Equally, they have a really good record.
They won one in 2005, which was the most important one, right? So I'm sticking to my guns on that one.
How's that lucky? Get the Jenkins blocked on.
But no, you're right. The record is fantastic. And, you know, at the same time, Wales have done very well in Dublin, you know? So it's strange how that one has flipped around, okay?
Yeah. Well, look, okay, let's start with the Ireland team today. And Wes, it's unchanged, probably along the lines as we expected. The big news, if there is a big news, is that Tommy Bowe's come on to the replacements bench. Joe Schmidt says he's been training like a dog, which he must have been, because the last time he came on against Scotland, he was a shambles.
Yeah, okay. I suppose you wanted, you know, is Jared Payne, was he considered? He might have been, you know, maybe people talk about his ability to cover 15 as well. He might have got the spot. You have to feel for Gilroy a bit with a hat-trick. He's obviously not the winger du jour out in Carlton House.
As soon as Joe Schmidt was asked about Gilroy after Italy and Rome, he actually said, well, defensively, he was all over the place. So, yeah, his hat-trick is fine, but he's a lot of stuff to work on. So he was straight away undercutting what he managed to achieve.
We are in danger of being extremely pessimistic when our only complaint is about number 23, in fairness. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I am a little surprised he kept it.
But he's got so many riches, really, in every position that he can afford to be that picky.
Joey Carberry might have been a belter to make the bench, given his form in the Pro 12 the last few weeks, Mike.
Yeah, and he's really good in open play, so he would suit that back three, plus coming on as a full back as an option, especially if he needed to chase the game. If someone kicks to him, then he's a real threat coming back at you. You know, I watched the game Leinster against the Dragons a couple of weeks ago in the mud, and there was nothing much in it for 20 minutes. The Dragons are very competitive, but they made a mistake to keep on kicking the ball to Joey Carberry, and they kicked it to him one time. He just cut the Dragons up, and next minute it was 50 points. So he's that type of player, whether he plays a 10 or whether he plays a 15, or even if he had to do an emergency job on a wing.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, his footwork and his ability.
He's an ideal replacement, though, isn't he, to bring off the bench to cover all those positions, and he can change a game.
Well, yeah, look, he's a class act, but it is a big ask, mind, in a game of the magnitude of this particular game on a Friday night, different type of setting, massive crowd. You know, to suddenly ask him perhaps to come out and play out of position, possibly off the bench. You know, Tommy Bowe's been there and he's done it every time, you know. So I don't know exactly what his current form is, and it is tough on Craig Gilroy. But obviously Joe, you know, he hasn't made too many errors with his selection. So
I think
if he's happy.
Tough on Tyrone O'Halloran as well. Yeah. In a
and Andrew
picture,
Conway
he's
even.
He's been good, you know. But yeah, look, you can see why he did it. It was interesting, actually, I heard Stuart Lancaster a few weeks ago saying that maybe Carberry's future's at 15. That he actually compared him to Israel Dagg in terms of stepping in as a first receiver on the short side and things like that, which, you know, was interesting to hear.
Yeah, well, look, to be honest with you, I've had that thought when I first saw him as well, because obviously a 10 very often puts other players into space. And obviously Joey's one of his best attributes is actually ripping people apart in the open play, you know. So do you want him always being the playmaker and putting other people into the holes, or do you want him sort of threatening those holes and running those holes himself, you know? So I think it'll just emerge naturally. I think if they keep on sort of giving him game time at 10 or 15, I think eventually sort of the needs of the team will unfold and he'll settle there.
Okay, so the Wales team also unchanged. Was there a real argument for bringing Toby Faletau into that back row, do you think, or are you liking what you've seen so far from Moriarty, from Tibberick and from Warburton?
Oh, they're class players, but personally I would have made changes. You know, I can see what Rob Howley's thinking. He's thinking, okay, we didn't play well in Scotland, particularly second half. You know, we fell away badly. Give these boys a chance to get out there and put things right. They've taken a lot of stick. I mean, even their own grannies in Wales would be shouting over the fence at them, you know.
The most important voices in rugby in Wales.
I would say, when I was Welsh coach, I said there's an unusual statistic. We got 18,000 registered Welsh rugby players and 3 million registered Welsh selectors. You know, everybody's got a view.
Yeah.
But I can see what he's thinking. But personally, look, I think there's three players there would make a massive difference. Jamie Roberts, I would put him straight in.
Really?
Yeah, because he's angry now. He's hurting, he's angry, he's been on the bench. I mean, it's Lion's year. Right, you know, I would say to him, use the jersey, son. You know, you've had your kick up the backside. You know, Robbie Henshaw is going to be in the Lions unless you get out there today and show what you're made of. And that would be my pep talk to him. And personally, I think against the Irish back row, he's so big and powerful, such big ball carriers. You want the biggest back row you can against them. I know there's going to be a fight on the floor as well, but I would have gone for Ross Moriarty at 6, Faletau at 8, and I would have gone for Warburton at 7, and I would have put three big guys in there against them, because
that would be
stop
titanic collision, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you just got to stop those guys on the gain line. Now,
they've been good at that the last few years, though. You know, with obviously Lydiate's not there this year, and he's been kind of the architect of the chop tackle and everything. But yeah, Wales have, when Ireland have been one dimensional, Wales have snuffed it out. Well
it's absolutely, and it's more than just the collisions. For example, you know, the bigger guys give you a bigger lift in the lineout. You know, they give you a little bit more weight in the scrum. And the Irish pack, you know, when you're defending, you know, a line out against Ireland, those extra inch or two on the lifts, maxing out, you know, the Irish pack is such a big front five and a big pack. Anyway, every little 1% you can get really makes a difference. And again, I would have gone for Luke Charteris. Again, I know he's short of game time. I think he made 31 tackles a couple of years ago against Ireland.
I was in Murrayfield when he came off the bench last time, and he was, as soon as he came onto the pitch, the Welsh pack lifted. I mean, it still wasn't enough to win the game, but he made a massive impact on his own just coming off the bench last time.
Absolutely. And, you know, I coached Luke many, many years ago in the Dragons, and I've seen what he can do. You know, when he first came on the scene, everybody thought, oh, a big tall boy, he's just going to be a line-up player. In fact, that was probably the worst part of his game when he first started out, but he had this great engine and this great ability to get low, which Dev Toner, in fairness, has worked on over the years.
He's still Luke, working on it, though.
Yeah, Luke could naturally do it, you know. You get down and chop guys down, and his work rate and his engine. I would have made those three changes. I think they would have, you know,
in for Jake Ball then,
brought a lot to the Welsh cause. And they you'd have had one or two angry guys going on there, and you would have one or two fresh guys going on there who are world class, let's be honest.
The thing about Justin Tibberick is that when he has been used off the bench for Wales, he has made an instant impact, because he's a different style of back row, as you just said, but he's so quick, he's so electric as well, and he can change a game.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, don't forget, the last 20-30 minutes the game is breaking up a bit. It's you know, the first sort of 50 minutes is dominated by your homework. You've done the homework on the opposition. You're trying to stifle out the line out. You're trying to stifle out the, you know, the three or four backline strike moves that you've noticed. You're trying to win the battle of the breakdown. So it's a bit like a boxing match. There's a lot of jabbing going on. And then all of a sudden, as people get tired, you know, there's more chance for the counter-punching opportunities to come in, and it loosens up a little bit. And that's where Tipperick, I think, would be at his best that last 20 minutes.
Okay. So for me, what I'm most looking forward to about this game is the battle of scrum half, because we have Conor Murray, who just dominated proceedings so well with Johnny Sexton against the French, and has been one of Ireland's best players and most consistent players, against a guy just back from injury, Reece Webb, who undoubtedly is one of the best talents in Europe at the moment at number 9.
He's a class player, in fairness. I know he had one or two, he'd have had to play in some of those botched chances the last day against Scotland, but he's such a live wire. But I think, you know, he falls into this category as well. But Mike was saying there's no doubt they're back row or class players. But I think you could look at a whole bunch of players across the Welsh team, especially in the back three, maybe the centre and out half and the back row, in that they're key players. We know they're, you know, there's no question their ability, but they're not performing to their highest level at
the
minute.
No, anyways, but very often with selection, and I've been coaching now for 30-odd years, it's about the balance, the mix that you get. You know, it's not just saying, well, Tipperick, okay, is a fantastic player, Warburton's a fantastic player, Ross Mariotti's doing ever so well, and is on his way to being a fantastic player. But is the mix quite right? I don't think it is, you know, for this particular game.
Would you swap Liam Williams and Halfpenny?
Yeah. Look, Reese, my son, I've got a photograph in the house of Reese playing West Wales under 11s with Liam Williams in the same team.
Wow.
And the East Wales under 11s team, three of the pack that day were Toby Faletau, the two Vinopola brothers, Marco and Billy, from because their father was the Pontypridd hooker at the time.
Yeah.
So it was very funny. So watching the, you know, these guys coming out in a Welsh jersey under 11s, the Tongan lads, and of course they've gone on the great thing. So I guess the point I'm making is I've seen Liam Williams since he was 11 years of age, and he's best again, like Joey talked about earlier, in open field, broken play. He's got an instinct to counter attack. He's very dangerous. Attacker, I would give him carte blanche at fullback to counter, be our sort of counter attack captain, and look to counter attack as much as you can. He's very, very dangerous, and don't give him too much of a script.
Lee Halfpenny's confidence is shot as well. And like when you have someone like Dan Biggar, if you're going to stick with say Dan Biggar over Sam Davies at out half, you have your goal kicker in your out half there. What you're giving away with Lee Halfpenny not on the pitch in terms of goal kicking, I think Liam Davies offers a hell of a lot more at fullback.
Well, look, you can even swap him, just put Halfpenny on the wing. He's not going to let you down there. And he's available to kick the goals. But let's be honest, the winger's probably going to touch the ball less than the full back. And again, you know,
it's kind of like the argument people make, should Simon Zeebo be playing a 15 for Ireland sometimes? Get him on the ball as much as you can.
Yeah, and the beauty about Simon, of course, is he's got a left foot. So if he can run out of trouble, you can work the ball from the right side to the left side and use him as a wiper kicker. You'll bring the wingers up and he can launch it in behind, and you've got pace then, you know, on the chase. We used Gareth Thomas when I was coaching, a back three or three wingers really, and I think that Liam's pace, but his ability with his left foot as well, and his overall attributes as a player, his evasiveness particularly and his pace would mean he's very, very dangerous in that counter-attacking role. Lee Halfpenny would be a little bit more of a kick-chase player for me as a fullback. And again, I've seen Lee. Again, Rhys was in the Ospreys. Kieran, my other lad, was in the Ospreys under-18s, under-19s, under-20s teams. I've seen Lee Halfpenny all the way through from that age, you know? So I know his game inside out, and I'd be comfortable with him on the wing. As a coach, I would prefer Liam Williams at 15.
How is Reese these days?
Yeah, he's good, mate. Thanks for asking. He played his second game back after some injuries against... who was it the other night?
Dragons?
Billy Barry 15.
No, it was the Scarlets.
Yeah, I forgot about it. I watched him against the Dragons a week before, and then Scarlets Friday. And he played well. He got over for a try,
He
just seemed to be enjoying himself. And I suppose, you know, it sinks in these days with these players that when it's such a, you know, a sort of massively physical game that these injuries come along and you've got to learn to deal with them. So anytime you get back on the pitch, you can just sort of not relax, of course, but you've got to try and enjoy it.
What does he make of the competition that Leinster back row?
Yeah, well, it's absolutely, he loves it. I think like any player, the more competition you have, the better you should play, and if there's anything about you. So you know, that's the way he's looking at it. He knows he's got to play well every time he takes the field. And that's what competition does. And we talked earlier about Craig Gilroy being left out after scoring three tries. You know, he's going to say, okay, this is what Joe wants me to work on. It's going to make me a better player. And off he goes.
And he's been unlucky with injury, Reece, over the last while, hasn't
he? Yeah, he has. I mean, he broke his arm three times and I think that knocked him back. But he did well to get back. And, you know, he's. I think he's really looking forward to the rest of the season. You know, I think that break in some ways has freshened him up as well. And he's feeling confident about his game. So hopefully a couple of chances by the internationals are away to to show that he should be in the mix.
Okay, well, we're going to hear from one of the Ireland players starting this weekend. Tadhg Furlong was speaking at the Irish team announcement earlier today in Carton House. He's made his first cap against Wales. When you think that George North now has 50 caps, and Tadhg Furlong, who played as part of the World Cup warm-up series, is going to earn his 15th this weekend. He's been talking to Damien O'Mara.
International sport. Thought they played really well against England at home, and then had a really good first half against Scotland. I'm sure they'd be disappointed with the second, but that being said, they have a chance there now at home in front of, you know, what's a very, very passionate crowd and country about rugby. So I think it's going to be a massive test for us, but it's one where everyone's looking forward to.
And you know yourself, part and parcel of life as a professional sportsman is the bit of a backlash or the increased focus when things don't go right. So you can only imagine what they've had to endure over the course of the championship, that they've probably been festering somewhat in their team hotel waiting to get out in the field to play this weekend.
Yeah, they had a down week there as well. In between games, sometimes when you lose one, you like to get back onto the saddle. So I don't think it changes much for us. We know it's going to be an absolute battle out there, and I don't think anyone expects any different when the Irish play the Welsh.
Mm. Just in terms of Ireland and the championship, it's effectively cup final rugby between now and the conclusion of the championship, which I'm sure focuses the mind no end.
Yeah, you know, we're no illusions that it's a must-win game for us if we want to keep our championship hopes alive, but I think we take the game in isolation and don't look too far ahead of it because, you know, it's an absolutely massive test for us as a squad, and I suppose it's a really good barometer of where we are.
And have you seen that progression over the course of the last couple of weeks, that we are heading back to the full potential that you might see within the camp, or the full potential you see possible for us in training day in, day out?
Yeah, I think there's plenty in our game still to work on, but I think there's a really good vibe around training. There's you know, there's really good energy there, and lads are ripping and raring to go. So I think we're looking forward to hopefully putting in a good performance and one that we can stand over and be happy with.
Just in terms of Wales, where are the main threats? What are the particular areas that you think they're going to look to focus upon and build what they hope will be a win on Friday?
Oh, look, they're an incredibly big and physical team. I think as a front row forward, you look at their scrum, it can be very dangerous. We probably found that out a bit last year. In terms of their maul and maul defence, you know, they're big, strong men, and they're very capable in that area. And you look in their back line and there's threats all over. You know, they've strong physical specimens that have a lot of speed about them, and they attack with really good speed and depth. So I think we're going to really have to be on our money to try to cope with them.
Just a word from your own perspective. It's almost back to where it all began for you in terms of the team that you made your debut against. The 15th cap this weekend. You seem to have taken to international rugby like a duck to water.
I suppose before I got opportunities in Jersey, I'd been around the squad a long time. If I look at their team, you know, I was at 20s World Cup with Samson Lee and Rob Evans, who, you know, I'll be scrummaging down against the weekend. And my first cap was actually George North's 50th, and he's born the same year as me, same age as me. So when you put it in that perspective, it might not seem so glossy, but, you know, I'm really enjoying it, and I'm just trying to perform the jersey any chance I get. Mm.
But do you relish it that bit more when you've had to wait and you've seen other fellas get the run ahead of you? Do you savour every moment of it because you've had to wait that little bit longer for it?
I wouldn't say you savour every moment on the pitch, because sometimes you're working so hard that you've other things on your mind. But it's pleasing. It's obviously a huge honour playing for your country, and I don't think if you're 24 or 34 that feeling never subsides, or I hope it doesn't. The pride and representing the people where you come from.
How do you take the accolades then? Because you know, your performances over the last couple of months, people have long been talking about you with the Lions. They've long been talking about you being, you know, amongst the future of this rugby team. Do you pay attention to any of that? Do you even acknowledge it, or do you just focus on the 80 minutes and training this week?
Yeah, look, you know it's there. It's nice to hear nice things, but it doesn't really change a whole lot on your mindset or what you're trying to do in the game. So, look, it's nice for people to write and say nice things about you, but at the same time, you know, you keep the feet firmly on the ground and try to play on, because, as you said, I've only a handful of caps, and I still have a lot of progression to do.
Just a final word. I'm sure the mentality within the team room and the mentality around Carton House this week is that, you know, we are firmly still in this championship. We are a firm team to, you know, contend against England for the destination of silverware. But the reality is the hard work of that revolves around a good performance and a good result on Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's been much of a word about England around the camp, to be honest, which it's all about being Wales this week. And you can't look too far ahead. It's going to be a massive test. It's going to be a massive battle out there. And we're just all excited to try to get on the pitch now and play.
Yeah, so Tadhg Furlong there, who really has come on leaps and bounds, Mike, over the last, I suppose, 18 months, but particularly in the last 12 months. You know Tadhg very well from your time as Ireland under 20 coach.
Yeah, I do. And he's a smashing lad. He was injured for us during the Six Nations the year that I sort of worked with him with the under 20, so I only got him for the World Cup. Didn't have a huge amount of time with him, so I started to get to know him in the World Cup. And obviously he's a big strong boy at set piece time, we know that, and he's been getting better and better there. But what struck me was this incredible engine. He was getting around the park smashing people for fun in the tackle, carrying the ball, and popping up in places where you didn't expect the tight end to be. And I was most impressed. Now, what I used to do was I'd give awards out. I'd give them all nicknames pretty much anyway, partly because I was hopeless at pronouncing some of the Irish names. But I'd give them all nicknames, and I used to call him the Mayor of Wexford. He's a Wexford lad, and so I'd sort of pull his leg about that. And then I'd give these awards out after every game. So, for example, King of the Breakdown, who was normally one of the back row guys, Aaron Keneally, he's a blonde-haired lad.
Yeah, he's from Connacht. Yeah, yeah,
I used to call him the German.
he has that Aryan look about him, doesn't he?
Yeah, so normally the German would win the King of the Breakdown.
Right.
And then I'd have Tackle of the Day, and three consecutive games running Tadhg Furlong won Tackler of the Day, you know, with a great tackle count and the best and most effective tackle. So I said, lads, it's no surprise that you know, fourth game up, the winner of the tackle of the day is the Mayor of Wexford. And Tadhg put his hand up. He said, Mike, don't call me the Mayor of Wexford anymore. I thought I'd offended him. I said, oh, I'm really sorry, Tadhg, what should I call you? He said, call me the Jukebox. I said, why the Jukebox? He said, well, the hits keep coming.
Oh God, fair play. So not only can he tackle and scrummage, he's also the cheesiest guy in the Irish starting 15 at the moment.
Smashing lad.
Have you noticed any difference there, Mike? We saw John Ryan did media for Ireland on Monday.
Yeah.
And like a real country lad, much like Tadhg, and like, have you noticed any difference in that? I suppose the typical rugby player, where they're from, has that changed during your time in Ireland? Is the pool a bit broader, and are some of the old stereotypes a bit less true?
Oh, I think it's opened up big time over many years now. Because of course, don't forget, when I first came over in '97 to coach Leinster, there were a number of boys from outside the traditional rugby playing schools, and Shane Hogan, for example,
Meath,
and Trevor Brennan, and guys like that were coming through. And I think there were a number of others, really, if I sat down and thought about it. So I think those guys were the first ones that started to break the mould a little bit. And I think the you know, the identification, talent identification systems are so good now that a lot more guys are getting into the systems and getting these opportunities. So I think it's fantastic.
What was the perception of Ireland when you were a Wales coach? I mean, and I suppose looking at the Irish team now and the reputation given the last few years' performance, has it shifted how I suppose the likes of Wales, maybe England, whatever, view Ireland as a force in rugby? And the advent of professionalism, I mean, it seems to me, like, you think back to, say, the early 2000s when we were still grasping this professional game, you know, we were behind probably in strength and conditioning now. Do you think that view of Ireland has shifted a little bit in the last few years?
No, I think everyone, you know, really respected Irish rugby, particularly in those, you know, the 2000s, because Ireland started winning European Cups, which the Welsh regions couldn't do and the Welsh clubs hadn't done. So I think everyone was very respectful and realised that Irish rugby was very, very strong. Was it 99 that Ulster won the European Cup? Munster had won it. Then Leinster won it,
2009.
Okay, so, you know, they could see the quality was there, but they weren't winning Grand Slams, for example, even though we were winning Triple Crowns. So they knew that the quality was there, but perhaps that final ruthless edge perhaps wasn't quite there.
Did the Welsh regions underachieve, or did the Welsh national team overachieve with those number of Grand Slams?
I think a bit of both. I think then the Welsh regions then, even though Wales were winning Grand Slams and won three in 10 years, the Welsh regions were nowhere really in Europe. So I think it was the opposite in some ways.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's hard for Irish fans to get their head around that.
Yeah,
you know,
the Ospreys had, like, I remember the year Munster beat them in 09 in the quarter final, and the team, in hindsight, when you look back at it, I think six of that Ospreys team that were beaten by 40 points in Thomond Park played in the test for the Lions in South Africa. I mean, that is when you had James Hook, Shane Williams, Mike Phillips, Ryan Jones, on and on and on. I mean, they had this, one of the strongest teams in Europe for years, which is.
But I think it just shows that, you know, the environment makes such a difference with any team, even if you've got the same sort of players. And Scotland are proving that, of course, now. You know, you know, I know Glasgow have done well the last few years and have won a title, but, you know, no one thought this year that Scotland would end up putting Ireland away and Wales away at home. I certainly didn't think that. I knew it'd be tough matches. So, you know, it just shows the environment that Vern Carter's created.
Because I mean, you said, like, there's such a passion. You mentioned the 3 million you know, selectors for Wales. There's such passion for rugby still in Wales, yet that doesn't really translate to the regions. And, you know, we've done plenty of matches. We've been going down to Swansea to do the Ospreys, and you got a stadium with just a couple of thousand people in it. Same with the Scarlets, maybe less degree with the Scarlets, but you know, it's baffling to me that there is this huge interest in rugby that doesn't transfer to the regions, but yet when the Welsh team get together as a national team, it explodes.
Yeah, it's the regions, I guess, we see them as slightly manufactured, you know, because, you know, in fairness to Ireland, you traditionally, geographically, you've got four proper provinces, you know, that geographically are outlined and have been forever and a day. But
I suppose it's like the disconnect all club followers here have with the provinces, but it's just on a bigger scale in Wales.
It is, but they can't argue that ultimately they live in a particular geographical, you know, province or region, and surely that's you know, they're part of that, and they can't go anywhere else. You could live in Pontypridd, and they tell you that you're now part of the Blues region, Cardiff region, yet originally you were part of the Celtic Warriors region. So obviously that's upset a lot of people up there. They don't really feel part of it, and you get that lack of identity, that lack of support geographically. It doesn't quite work out the same way. So, for example, you know, when I played rugby for Swansea in the 1800s, you know, one of the, you know, worst, or the, well, the best games to play in, but the worst feeling, if you like, between teams was between Swansea and Neath. I mean, some of the stuff I saw going on the field, we hated each other, you know, and then all of a sudden they join up and become a region, you know, that
it just goes against the grain.
It goes against the grain, you know. It just, people can't get their heads around it still, you know.
Yeah, no, it's probably understandable. Okay, so just looking at the rest of the weekend, we have a very interesting game on Saturday afternoon, England against Scotland. And there's a growing sense, I think, that actually, given the form that England displayed against France in the opening game, that Wales probably should have beaten them, but for that last-minute kick, and we won't talk any more about that, that actually Scotland could win this game and actually should be going to win this game. Would you agree with that?
No.
I second that.
Go on.
No, I think they'll be very competitive, and they'll bring a passion. You know, it's interesting, really. The Scottish Rugby Union, to me, have made a few mistakes. I mean, they went out a couple of years ago, said we're going to win the World Cup in 2023 or whatever, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and they've got nowhere. Then they decided to bring Vern Carter in as coach. Give him a couple of 3 years or whatever as a contract, just as he's starting to make some headway. They told him to move on.
What do you think of that, Mike?
I think it's very bizarre. It's real. I don't know what the hell they're thinking. But the Scottish Rugby Union, you know, if everything ends up sort of going in, you know, haywire for them on the field, I mean, they've only got themselves to blame.
But that was a weakness, I thought, because we had a situation where Gregor Townsend said, "Oh, I'm going to head off to France or whatever if you guys don't give me the Scottish job." Vern Carter was doing a reasonable effort, and now we know a very good job. They should have told Gregor, all right, off you go.
And you will become a better coach because of it, and we see you as a future Scotland coach. Go and do what you got to do. Put a clause in there saying that if we need you, we can call you back out.
Yeah.
Because there's no doubt in our mind you will be the next Scotland coach.
Yeah.
Go and get that experience.
Bide your time.
Yeah,
you're
we'll
young
give
guy.
Vern a crack, yeah. Because obviously he's a quality guy with his track record. I don't know what they've done, but what I love about the scenario that's unfolded is that the Scottish lads obviously felt for their coach, and when the news broke before the season started, they must have had a chat there and said, look, you know, this guy is at the wrong end of the stick here, you know, he's had a tough time here, let's go out and play for him, and show that this guy's really brought something to the Scotland setup. And to me, every time they go out to play, they're playing for the guy, and obviously they're playing for Scotland, playing for the jersey, but they've added that extra passion to go with a very good sort of team effort. And I wouldn't be surprised if they get very, very close. I don't see them winning, though.
Really?
I just don't see them
winning. Even though England were pretty horrendous against Italy for the most part, bar the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, but again, I've coached in the Premiership. There's so many good players there. Mm. They're so big and tough. Now, if it was in Scotland, I'd say the other way.
Okay.
I'd go with you. But,
okay.
Yeah, I think...
The Twickenham factor would just be enough, you know?
Okay, I presume we think France are going to beat Italy, or is there an upset on the cards here?
Depends if they contest the rocks or not, I guess, you know.
Yeah, we'll wait and see what Conor O'Shea comes up with. Before we finish up, I have to ask you about how you're getting on in the Ulster Bank League at the moment. Myself and Wes are big fans. I'm down in Division 2B supporting Greystones. He's still a Cookies fan. So, but look, in terms of Lansdowne and the job that you've done over the last couple of years, they're still right up there as one of the best teams in Ireland at the moment.
Yeah, no, thanks for mentioning the Ulster Bank League. I think it's really good of you, because I'm passionate about that league. I think it's a really strong league. Mm. You know, you take it over the years, guys that have been with me that have gone on, like Marty Moore, Geordie Murphy, Tig Byrne now.
Yeah,
he's playing for the Scarlets and doing really well in Europe.
Yeah,
you know, there's so many guys. Craig Rawlinson, of course. Matt Healy went off to Connacht. There's a guy called Clive Ross who was playing for me in the back row. Came down from De La Salle Palmerston. Is up in the Ulster squad. So we're very proud of that. We got quite a few guys in the island in the 20s as well now this season. So, you know, we are proud that we're a showcase team. We are helping guys to showcase their talent. And I've got to say, and whoever wins the Ulster Bank League is the fifth best team in Ireland, you know, and that's not to be underestimated. And so I think it's a good standard. There's lots of good players at the moment. We are top of the league, but even if we stayed there, it doesn't matter, because we've got to try and perform in the playoffs at the end of the season. So, you know, that makes it even more interesting.
Playoffs, good or bad?
Well, of course, if you end the season and you sort of won the league, you think it's a bad idea. Yeah. But no, we know what it was before we started. And in fact, I've been lucky enough to win quite a number of leagues, you know, in my time in Ireland, in Wales. I won two Welsh leagues, for example. And I won the AIL before. But I won the AIL, or Lansdowne did, through the playoffs one time as well, a couple of years ago.
That's right, yeah.
And it was the first time I had to do it through playoffs.
That semi-final at the Aviva at Young Monsters was great. It's fantastic. Haverford League a few years ago.
And I thought, like, it was a new ground for me after 30 years of coaching to get into that. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a real test. Young Monsters were superb on the day and took us all the way. And we had to dig deep to get a try in the last minute of extra time. So, you know,
Do you get the sense that some of the powers that be in Ireland see club rugby ideally as kind of a recreational thing, and they'd rather that there should be more of an effort for there to be a definite link between the club game?
Like, what's the point of the B&I Cup, in other words? I mean, I don't, why not have the clubs as the next level down from the professional
Is that
system?
Doable anymore?
I haven't given a huge amount of thought, boys, you know, and you know, certainly I don't want to get too far into the political route here. Okay. What I would say is that there's lots and lots of good players in this Ulster Bank League, and there's players like we've shown with the likes of Matt Healy, who was missed, you know, didn't make the Leinster Academy, and then got capped last summer by Ireland in South Africa and didn't let it show down at all, you know. So there's lots of guys in this league who, actually given the chance, could do very, very well.
You look at Mark Roach over the last 3 or 4 months. I mean, he's been outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he wouldn't be out of place at all in the Leinster system.
Well, Tom Farrell left us to go to Bedford, the centre, and came back now as with Connacht and started with Connacht. So that just shows there's so many good players that if they are given the opportunity, and they might have to go away initially. What I would like to see, the one change I would like to see, would be a few more subs available. Because particularly for props, I think it would be great if we give more and more props experience in this league, even if it was only in 1A. Because I think that's an area where Irish rugby needs to keep on developing young props. We're so lucky that young Tig Furlong has come along, but sometimes we've had to go overseas to get props. So I think the more props we can develop in the Ulster Bank League, the better. Just one point on your, you know, whether it should be the B&I Cup, or some people are not think the league should be a recreational league. I got to say, you know, I'm in touch with Leo Cullen, for example, on a regular basis about players and about their form. So for us, I've got to say, there is good, very good dialogue.
That's great to hear.
And You know, for example, Max Deegan.
Yeah.
I had a chat to Leo about it the other day. He was in two minds whether or not to actually give him more time with the conditioners. I made a case for him to play a little bit and have one more game. And he played for us and he was outstanding.
Mm.
And then got on the bench the following week for Leinster. So I think that helped Leinster as well, you know. So
absolutely.
It helped us and it helped Leinster. So with that level of communication, we're delighted.
Okay, final call then. Wales, Ireland, Friday night in Cardiff. Pick your winner, Wes.
I think the first 20 minutes are absolutely crucial. Mm. Wales come in, the point to prove, crowd goes crazy, they get a bit of momentum, they could be really, really dangerous. If Ireland shut it down, I think Wales' confidence is a bit brittle at the moment. So I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I think that first 20 minutes will tell all.
Okay, Mike?
Well, if Ireland make it there for the first 20 minutes, because if they thought that Scottish bus driver was bad, that Welsh guy, he'll be taking him, he'll be taking him up the valleys. There'll be three punctures on the way to the ground. So 20 minutes into the game, Ireland might be 15 down. So they might not got it.
If Ireland are 15 down after 20 in this one, they won't win.
Yeah, all right. Listen, Mike, a pleasure. Best luck with the rest of the season with Lansdowne, obviously, as well. And it was great to talk to you. Okay, we're back with the RTÉ Rugby Podcast next week. Enjoy the Six Nations this weekend.
The RTÉ Rugby Podcast.